politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots and Minutemen, standing at the ready to fight anew for everything that matters in the way it matters, at the time it matters. And as always, here at CR Podcast, your host Daniel Horowitz back here today, April 3rd. That is quite a tall order. We truly have big problems that require big, innovative solutions. Commensurate with how much you think we face existential extinction and destruction, demographically, societally, culturally, fiscally, economically, healthcare-wise, liberty-wise, whether we'll be free, sentient, healthy individuals. Commensurate with that is your responsibility to find solutions. And that's what this show is all about. We switch off each day with, you know, immigration, inflation, culture, all sorts of things. What are the big ideas? So today we're going to focus on a couple of them, but particularly when it comes to persecution. The FBI persecution is real. They're arresting people for, not arresting people, but, well, they are doing that too, but investigating people for Facebook posts. This is happening. What is our solution? See, we have everything in this movement. We have all sorts of noisemakers. Everything but what you would actually need in a political movement. You know, like identifying the problems, identifying the solutions, and realistic ways to implement them where you can. It's that simple. But we don't have that. But as I've been noting, I'm tempering my Jeremiah with a little bit of positive verses in Ezekiel and Isaiah, where you are seeing a glimmer of hope that if we would only harness it a little bit more, we would actually turn things around. You know, as it turns into April, most legislative sessions are ending, and we're seeing this year in general was better than the previous year. We're making progress. But the problem is we're always playing catch-up. The later we introduce ideas and bills in multiple states, the longer it's going to take until we fulfill them. But it starts slow. You fail at first. You see this a lot with the Chinese land ownership bills, the tranny bills, even interior state immigration enforcement. It's starting to take off in several states. We're seeing that. But it's slow. And the question is it too little too late? We're always playing catch up. When will we finally get ahead of it? You know, ultimately the solution is states need to stop things. So we see with the FBI, we've made no progress whatsoever because conservatives never want to look like they're against law enforcement. But we have to stop this mindless back the blue mantra. So we're going to talk with Steve Friend later today on his bill to empower sheriffs to block FBI weaponization using Joint Terrorism Task Force teams and marshaling local officers into it. It failed in Tennessee, but he laid down a marker. How do we go and grow that elsewhere? And then we don't even have a movement, ironically, to stop new bad stuff, much less reversing inveterate trends. Hence, Ukraine. And I want to start with that first, before we go to some of the state items today, as always, one thing I'm very happy to sponsor is fastgrowingtrees.com. My house, not just my yard, but now my interior of my home has become a shrine of beautiful fast-growing trees. My wife, just last night, we got two more trees to decorate our home. They are the hardiest trees you will get. They are the best quality. They have a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee. If you go to fastgrowingtrees.com and use promo code conservative, they've had over 2 million happy customers. Now is the time, both indoor and outdoors. Outdoors, for sure, you want to plant with all the rain we're getting to make your yard look optimal for spring. I love gardening. My wife is now into interior design plants. And by the way, you have a lot of things like we've gotten mango, lime, avocado. These are things typically you can't grow in a northern climate, but indoors you can. So, you know, whether it's the indoor stuff, whether it's outdoors, you want, you know, shade, you want privacy, you just want beautification, they have on their website, you go to fastgrowingtrees.com. This spring, they have the best deals. A lot of plants are like 50% off. And then you put in promo code Daniel. I'm sorry, promo code conservative. Promo code conservative at checkout. You get an additional 15% off their first purchase. Again, that's an additional 15% off fastgrowingtrees.com using promo code conservative at checkout. Offer is valid for limited time. Terms and conditions apply. So make sure to scoop up this deal while you still have it. So, folks, what I can't figure out is we so don't have a movement. Forget about innovative ideas on welfare, healthcare. I mean, these are big issues. Culture, immigration. Because, again, I can't just say, oh, it should be like it was in 1776. Now, I think it's important for us to discuss conceptually where things ought to be so we have our North Star where we need to get. But then, you know, you also need innovative ideas how to realistically work with the political elected officials we have, how to change them. That's what a movement is, and that's what we try to do here every day. But then we can't even block the things, new bad things from passing Republican-controlled Congresses with leaders that are in the back pocket of Trump on an issue that is supposedly universal on the right. This is from Punchbowl. Speaker Mike Johnson has been giving clues recently about how he plans to push a Ukraine aid bill through the House. And they note that basically what he plans to do is attach a repo act to any Ukraine funding. And that means that they're going to confiscate and sell off Russian assets and use the proceeds to rebuild Ukraine. And then they're going to also have this lend-lease program, which of course won't get paid back. And they note, we understand Johnson's thinking here. The Repo Act has bipartisan support. Trump likes the loan idea and has gained traction with GOP senators who support Ukraine funding, including Lindsey Graham. So here we had the Trump movement and Trump himself for the express purpose of moving away from Lindsey Graham's foreign policy. And here we're bringing it in. I mean, this is happening right now. Right now. With Trump's support. How is it that nobody is even talking about this? Something that rhymes with Tucker once said that this is the top issue. Yet when it's actually coming down the pipeline and not just like, you know, some sort of, Massachusetts legislature where, you know, Tucker is not going to be able to wield any influence. I mean, Tucker could make one call, do one show on this. Hey, Johnson's doing this. Trump is supporting this. Trump's got to stop. But then again, it's the same reason why something that rhymes with Tucker consistently talks about now, not when it mattered, but the vaccines and COVID and all these people that aren't learning from their mistakes, except he won't call out the one guy that is not learning from his mistake, who A, is under Tucker's influence the most, and B, would be the most impactful advocate to convert. Isn't it funny how Tucker only seems to discuss Ukraine when it comes to, like, owning Ben Shapiro? Really has a thing with Ben Shapiro, as if Ben's the only one who supported aid to Ukraine and in the past supported vaccines, but, you know, has gone back on that. But, you know, then when it comes to the most impactful man who's right now supporting both of those, whatever happened to Ukraine being the most important issue? Do you even know what he's covering? It's like become the right-wing version of Oprah. Just weirdness. It's almost like they're allergic to focusing on the issues that matter at the time they matter. They can only focus on it when it's not, when there's no ball in play. But when it's actually in play, it's almost like they have to avoid it. God forbid should I actually influence an outcome. It's so weird. Again, email me danielhorowitz@startmail.com if you have some insight to this. This is going down right within the next 3, 4, or 5 days or so that Johnson is hellbent. This is his number one priority, is to find a way to pass the bill that he's trying to do with a majority of the majority. As you saw, he's willing to even do it with a majority of GOP against. But, you know, I would keep in mind, there's a lot of Ukraine supporters still left, and I wouldn't be surprised if he can get a narrow majority in the GOP conference. They note he's trying to bypass Rules Committee because Ralph Norman, Chip Roy, and Thomas Massie would block it. I mean, this is like a fire drill. You pull the fire alarm. I mean, why am I the only one pulling the fire alarm? Again, I was told that no other issue mattered. But then when it actually is going into fruition, I mean, Tucker especially, you know, even more than me, not just opposes the Ukraine grift, but seems to be, you know, very kind of positive of Putin and Russia. So, I mean, look, this is, you talk about World War III, seizing their assets and giving more money to their enemy. I mean, that's really going to draw us in potentially to that conflict a lot more. It's a little bit weird. And I just want to tell you guys, this is a warning headed forward. I just want you to understand, be very wary of what you wish for. Because if Trump were to become president, this is a glimpse of what we're going to see, where the Republicans are going to be doing bad things with his blessing, and the guns are going to go silent. You know how I know? Because I lived through that. Remember the First Step Act? Everyone was like, Barack Obama wants to let these freaking criminals out of jail. Are you kidding me? So we were able to block it under Obama. They started with it then. Trump becomes president. He endorses it because Jared Kushner convinced him. And Kim Kardashian and Kanye West and all these punks. And we were done. The guns fell silent and it passed. Just recognize that's going to continue happening. So we won't even, you don't even need innovative thinking. Just make the call, no new Ukraine funding. It's not like, what do we do 60 years into a healthcare dumpster fire? What do you do with 90 million people, 85 million people on Medicaid and all these dependency programs? What are the innovative ideas we have to make red states more independent of federal funding? What do we do with inflation when we're never going to control the feds at a state level? How do we leverage that? What do we do with the invasion at a state level? What do we do with the weaponization? Again, in a realistic way, not like, oh, we need to arrest all FBI. Okay, well, that's not going to happen right now. What are some other ideas that we could leverage? No answers. Silent. But again, it's not all bad news. Gradually, and especially because of these freedom caucuses, we are getting bills introduced, and some of them are passing because they're too scared to vote no. And that's the first step. But we're always playing catch up. You know, I was the first one to talk about state-based immigration enforcement. That's where it needs to be. It's getting there now. Again, it's a little bit too, you know, this should have been done a few years ago. And by now, you really just need the states to straight up deport. But because we didn't shove the Overton window over when we can, we're still kind of playing catch up, both politically, legally. I mean, I think politically, the public would support it. But, you know, you don't have enough members that are pressured to doing that yet. You have to slowly get them there. So we're going to talk with Steve Friend about how to do this on the FBI, you know, especially when there's this longstanding doctrine of back the blue, want to look like you're pro-law enforcement. You don't want to look like you're cutting resources or authorities to go after bad guys. So that's going to be a little bit of a tough road to hoe with even some conservatives, and we need to think of ways to get them righteous. So we'll talk about this on immigration and then move over to the FBI. First, our other sponsor today is, we're happy for our third year. I've now been on 3 years using ExpressVPN on all of my digital devices, computers, phones. Look, I mean, you have the same company that controls half of online retail also eavesdropping on your private conversations at home. We have a single company that controls 90% of internet searches, runs your email service, and gets to track everything you do on your smartphone. This is a big, big problem, especially today as we talk about the FBI. Even without the FBI, you have the so-called private companies working with government to track you and everything you do. Now, look, to be foolproof against the FBI is kind of tough, but certainly against these companies, ExpressVPN, it's like driving without brakes. You know what I mean? Like using a computer now, it gives me the creeps how many years I was doing it without it. But now when I run ExpressVPN on my device, the software hides my IP address. So, you know, that's what big tech utilizes to identify you. It makes it a lot harder. It also encrypts 100% of your internet data to keep you safe from hackers and eavesdroppers, you know, just in addition to the general corporate level. And what I like most about ExpressVPN is how easy it is to use. You download the app on your phone and computer, you tap one button, and you're protected. So even someone who is technologically illiterate like yours truly, it is so easy to use. So stop handing over your personal data to big tech's monopoly that mines your activity and sells your information, and then basically use the proceeds to hang you with the rope you bought. Protect yourself with the VPN I trust by visiting expressvpn.com/conservative. That's expressvpn.com/conservative to get an extra 3 months free. So that pays for a quarter of your first year by going to expressvpn.com/conservative right now. So, you know, immigration, again, I'm trying to follow up on as many issues as I can. We go around robin. You know, not this one trick pony. Oh, this is a nice ephemeral talking point to own the libs today. But what is our progress? So you look at the border, it's interesting that Bill Melugin of Fox News reports that they haven't published this publicly, but he got the numbers privately for March. We just finished March. And officially they had 137,500 apprehensions between ports of entry. And technically, that is the lowest March of Biden's presidency, relatively. But here's the deal. There were 52,000 encounters at the ports of entry. So if you add that up, it winds up being the third highest March of overall encounters under Biden. So, you know, it's like close to 190,000. So what's happening now is that I told you this when we all were like, oh, Texas is constructing barriers. And I said, look, it's all a bait and switch. Biden talks about legal pathways. That's why it's not a border crisis. It's an invasion. It's a multi-pronged invasion orchestrated by our own government and their allied NGOs. So they're flying them in, they're bringing them to ports of entries. That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. So again, this is why interior demagnetization and eventual deportation is the only solution. And the quicker we get there, the better. And the quicker we start moving the Overton window, introducing the bills in as many states simultaneously, using the right arguments, getting in the news, using the right news stories, the quicker we're going to get there. We all know this is where it ultimately is going to go. The question is, are we always going to be too little too late? That's the reality. And by the way, it wouldn't shock me if even with the airports and land ports and all the numbers relatively start to go down, still historically high. I mean, at some point, I mean, how many people could he bring in? I mean, all the people who wanted to come came. Meaning my point is, we're always, the left has a goal. They want to transform America, the economy, culture, society, security, demographics, all different ways. So they'll use a certain tool and they'll prime the pump. And it's like, we're like, you need to act. And they don't act. And finally, it's always like a little bit too little too late. And then finally, okay, well, yeah, it looks like that's not a thing. It's like, we saw that with Common Core, CRT, DEI. They'll call it a certain program, and finally we'll muster enough support. But if we don't do what's right, we'll be chasing our tail. It's like yesterday's issue. But they're achieving the same goal with a bigger and better way. And now we're at the point where, like I told you, if we got the numbers down to zero, which we're obviously not, and it's never going to happen under this president, we have enough to just destroy us. I think you're starting to see the stories percolate out publicly of just the degree of cultural transformation, the degree of security threats, you know, both from terrorists, gangbangers, just general freelance criminals that we have from the sheer magnitude of crap that we brought into this country. We have enough to destroy this country 50 times over if we didn't have another illegal immigrant come in at all. So, you know what I'm saying? Anything short of this, we're done. But we are gradually making progress. So, Florida passed a bunch of bills. Texas had the SB4, which was, you got the courts. Idaho, Louisiana, and Iowa have passed roughly similar things to SB4. Idaho just passed, I think it was the House, H-753, creates a new crime of illegal entry into the state. Makes it a crime for a non-U.S. citizen to enter Idaho directly from a foreign country outside of an official port of entry. Bill allows law enforcement officers to check immigration status of individuals and allows for a magistrate judge to order people who violate the bill to return to their country of origin. Iowa, I believe Kim Reynolds is about to sign a similar bill, a little bit different. You got Louisiana Senate Bill 388. Introduced by State Senator Valerie Hodges, makes it a crime for an illegal immigrant to enter or re-enter the state after having been deported. And it has up to a year in prison. It passed the Senate. Again, we need a little bit more. We need a little bit, multiple things, cutting off all benefits, cutting off foolproof employment, enforcement of all employment. And again, if we follow up on this stronger in a multitude of states and have real enforcement, then I think we might be on our way to a solution. This is from Fox News. Migrants in Iowa consider leaving over a bill that could see some arrested and deported. Legislation is expected to be signed by Kim Reynolds, would make it a state crime for a person to be in Iowa if previously denied admission or removed. So again, these bills are a step removed because they're not making it a crime on all illegals. It had to be, they had a previous denial or removal. Latino and immigrant community groups are organizing informational meetings. They're asking for face-to-face meetings with local law enforcement. 80 people gathered in Des Moines Public Library community room to ask questions in Spanish. Is it safe to call the police? Can Iowa police ask me about my immigration status? So you're starting to see the buddings of this. And like I've been saying for as long as I've been covering this issue, it's not a border issue. It's not a border security issue. I mean, you want certain infrastructure and deterrent at your border for various individualized threats. But the sheer magnitude of just this invasion of illegal immigrants, it's all about the ability to get benefits, get jobs, go to school for your kids, and basically live out in the open, just live a life here. If you made it that you can't settle in the individual states, either they won't come at all or they'll only go to Blue America, which, let's face it, even if you didn't have a single illegal alien, Blue America is a toilet to begin with that you can't live in anymore anyway. So, it's not going to make it any worse than the Native Americans in these areas. So that's a victory. If we rid red states of illegal immigration, now again, it's going to take a little bit stronger in more states with the right messaging, right, like we talked about, to get the courts to back off. And then obviously you need real follow through, and that's going to be the key, enforcement. But this is the sort of policy innovation we need. This is where all of our resources should be going. Meaning what I'm trying to tell you is it's not like we're getting nowhere. We do have, because of our ConAction teams, people like you and me, and, the State Freedom Caucus Network, and because of the leadership of DeSantis and Kim Reynolds on some issues, we're starting to get there on some issues. You could trace it on certain issues commensurate with how much we pushed. The Chinese land ownership bills, we're passing them, the tranny stuff, the DEI, it's getting passed. And now we're starting with the Interior Immigration Enforcement. Whereas, you know, even just a year ago, it was like, oh, no one's going to butt up against U.S. v. Arizona. States can't enforce. We're going to get struck down. We're not going to do this. We are starting to make some progress. But it's just, what's so frustrating is, based on the amount of progress, the little progress we are achieving, it demonstrates that if we actually had a critical mass movement focused on this sort of stuff when it comes up, if you had the something that rhymes with Tuckers of the world do things like this, we would have a different movement, different red state, different country. For all of time, for all of humanity, I want it to be known it doesn't have to be this way. It is so easy for us to shift that Overton window pretty quickly. Implementation itself shifts public opinion, which on most of these issues or all of these issues in red states, you don't even need to shift. The public is clamoring for most of this. By the way, before we get to our guest on how we do this with weaponization, so we got South Carolina, just going to medical freedom. In South Carolina, we have an important bill that is in committee in the Senate and needs to be brought to a floor vote. And I need you guys in South Carolina to email and call your members. South Carolina Senate Bill 975, it criminalizes employer discrimination based on vaccination status. It does a bunch of things. It also prevents pharmacy denial of off-label use of with a doctor's prescription like ivermectin. Other states, we have bills to make it over the counter. This one just makes it they can't deny, reduces some of the public health emergency powers of the public health authorities, you know, to shut things down and mandate things. And it releases South Carolina physicians from a legal obligation to order, prescribe, administer, or recommend any public health measure during that declared emergency. So this has a number of good things in it. It's probably the most comprehensive one we have in the state so far. So Senate Bill 975, again, this is something we really need. We got the Freedom Caucus pushing it, but we don't have a Freedom Caucus in the Senate. Oh, and by the way, I just want to say, I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on this. Speaking of South Carolina, so as you well know, we already have Trump-endorsed incumbent William Timmons over the Freedom Caucus chairman, Adam Morgan, running for House district in the Spartanburg-based district, District 4. There's another seat there, the Southern District upstate. So there's kind of two upstate districts. This is the one that's more kind of borders Appalachia, Georgia, south of Greenville. This is District 3. Jeff Duncan is a Freedom Caucus member. He's got some personal issues. He's not running for re-election. It's an open conservative seat that we need to fill. The movement has gotten behind Stuart Jones. Why Stuart Jones? Because he is one of the lead Freedom Caucus guys in the state house. So that's a known record. Trump endorsed this pastor, Mark Burns. I don't know enough about him. I mean, I haven't spoken to enough people yet. But he's kissed Trump's ass for 10 years, so he's gotten this endorsement. This is a classic example of how if you're Trump and you care about the movement, you don't wade into a conservative district like that that's open to get someone without a record over someone who does have a record. I mean, even if this guy would be decent, which I don't know not to be the case, but again, just totally interfering with everything. So stupid. But anyway, this is what it is. It's commensurate with how much we put in, we get. We need big solutions to big problems, and that leads me to our guest, Steve Friend. So when we assess and analyze each issue, and there's about 8-10 of them that we're trying to do in a number of these states, and they all lie at the foot of life, liberty, and property, demographics, society, culture, future, economy, you name it. To varying degrees, some of them are easier or harder to implement in the red states. Some of them were more successful. And for the most part, it's commensurate with how much we put in. Like I said, you know, guns, issues like that, we have a movement, we're being very successful. The tranny stuff, we're moving in the right direction. Chinese land ownership moving in the right direction. DEI, all these things, you know, at least at its base level, remember, the left does adapt and you have to do it more fully. You can get rid of a DEI program and not really get rid of the issue. But the point is, we're making some progress. And like we said, we're even starting a little bit on interior immigration enforcement. What's got to be in the top three, and in some levels, it could be the number one. And this issue, we really have made zero progress so far, is the FBI weaponization. Like, this is not funny anymore. This is not just a talking point of, oh yeah, the deep state, or they're going after Trump. I mean, they are literally criminalizing and investigating, and even in the case of Steve Baker, let's face it, there's a facade there, but they're ultimately going after him for free speech. They ultimately, if you are saying things that the government doesn't like, you are a target. That is the ultimate nightmare scenario that our founders envisioned of sliding back into pre-Enlightenment governance, that in a supposed democratic country, you would be potentially arrested and deprived of liberty for saying things that should be covered by our First Amendment. But that is happening. I mean, you've all seen, there's been several videos of people not arrested, but questioned by the FBI, agents knocking on the door, didn't like their social media posts that were nowhere near personalized threats. What are we doing about this? As always, the solution lies in the states, but it is a little bit more complicated. It's more complicated because, unlike other issues where it's more like states could just kind of do what they want, just do vaccine policy different, do immigration enforcement different, do crime differently. When it comes to this case, you actually have to actively interpose against the FBI, and that's tough. It's tough logistically. It's also tough politically because Republicans generally want to be pro-law enforcement, and this is something that we have to break into their mind that we're living in a different era. And there's only one person I know that is trying to be innovative, think of big solutions to a big problem, very big problem, and that's my friend, Steve Friend. He is the big FBI whistleblower that other, you know, rather than other whistleblowers or people that rise to fame over a certain issue that just are content with exposing the problem, he actually is like, well, this really, I'm not just trying to become a celebrity. This is actually a big issue. They're going after him personally now, and they're going after everyone, and it needs to be dealt with. And we talked about before, we had him on recently, that he drafted a bill that was introduced by members of the Tennessee legislature, SB 2804 and HB 2912, under its revised version. It would give the sheriff power to complete oversight over who, if anyone, under that jurisdiction, whether it's a sheriff or a police chief, depending on the, you know, city, county, the chief law enforcement officer in that area, they have to determine who gets roped into a JTTF task force under the FBI. So when they are, you know, investigating people like you and me potentially for domestic terrorism, that A, they need local law enforcement resources and intel to do so, but also, you know, they grab them secretly without any accountability. And if you are pro-law enforcement, it should mean that you are pro-local law enforcement that is accountable directly or indirectly to the electorate. So that individual needs to be making those determinations. So this bill just simply said that, look, the sheriff or the chief law enforcement officer gets the final say. And this is really the first step in creating some sort of oversight over the FBI and getting law enforcement themselves to interpose on our behalf when there's tyranny, and this will allow them to really expose and accentuate the problem. So, for example, you know, if a sheriff's like, "Hey, I'm not letting my guys go into this because I feel like you're going after Catholics. I feel like you're targeting, you know, people that are skeptical of the elections or the vaccines or whatever." This is how it needs to be done. Now, it failed. It didn't go anywhere in committee. But like we're saying, that's not a failure. Thanks to Steve, we have a draft, we have an idea, and again, I want all of you in your respective states and teams to go to Tennessee, SB2804, HB2912, and get your members in your states to introduce this. The quicker we get these bills introduced, the quicker they'll start to pass committee. And some states start to pass on the floor. And, you know, again, it's going to happen. We're going to have to do this. The question is it going to be too little, too late? Are we going to have to suffer more tyranny? And that's up to you. But with us today is Steve Friend himself. Again, he's fellow at Center for Renewing America. You go to AmericaRenewing.com. And there you'll find his white papers and other important white papers and other issues as well, ideas that we need to fight. He has a podcast, The American Radical, you could find on Rumble as well, at Real Steve Friend on Twitter, and he's with us in the flesh today. Hey, Steve, thanks so much for coming back again on short notice to update us.
No, thank you very much for having me.
All right, Steve. So you heard my intro there. I want to get from you just the short of it. What happened in Tennessee, the good, the bad, the ugly? What our teams can learn in terms of the sorts of arguments we need to make and what we're up against trying to get red states to push back against the FBI?
Well, it was definitely a learning experiment. For me, I didn't really have any background in doing any sort of state level activism. I went a couple of months ago to Tennessee for a week and sort of barnstormed around to some of the grassroots organizations to get them behind this, and then wound up interacting with senators and House members for the state on this issue. I think we made a tactical error in our initial draft, because the initial draft said that no sheriff's deputies or police officers could actually become a member of a joint terrorism task force. And they could still work, but then there was concern about, well, they're, for all intents and purposes, they would be task force officers, and we're worried about not being able to work with the FBI. And as soon as the word terrorism gets thrown out, the immediate default reaction that you get from Republicans is that they want no part of that. They want to back the blue no matter what. So we wound up, I went to Tennessee to testify week and a half ago about this in front of the House, and they tabled it. I was there all day long, spoke to multiple members, actually had support, I felt, after my testimony from one of the Democrats on the House subcommittee under the criminal justice, and they tabled it. They were uncomfortable with the language, went back, redrafted, and essentially simplified it to one paragraph, half a page, that says that if you nominate someone, deputy or police chief, to become a member of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, they still have to get the approval from their sheriff or their police chief on each case that they work on. So we essentially have to read the police chief or the sheriff into the file. They have to have a need to know, and therefore they can sort of assess whether or not the FBI is out of control. And we brought that back, felt pretty confident about it, didn't have any negative feedback going into it, thought that it stood a really good chance. But ultimately, when it went in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, was brought up, they could not get a motion or a second to actually take that up, and that was a committee that had 7 Republicans and 1 Democrat.
And the sponsor of the bill is not on the committee.
That's correct. Yeah, he's not a member of that committee. Neither was the sponsor of it in the House. They were both outsiders.
So you got a sponsor, a 7-1 Republican panel, and you're telling me not a single Republican supported it?
No, and actually the one that spoke out publicly afterwards, when there was some criticism of it, it was indicated to me that he didn't actually read the bill. I mean, he was talking about the old bill that we had gone back and revised, and he hadn't taken the time or consideration to read a half a page updated law, and just refused to give it the opportunity to be brought forth even for a debate on this issue.
Wow. Now, again, this is not all bad. In other words, it demonstrates the challenge and opportunity in red states that we talk about every day, that if you do nothing, if you allow Newton's motion of political, you know, Newton's laws of political motion to remain in force, we will be on our road to hell with no backstop or no interposition on this issue or any other issue. Okay, they're not going to do it on their own. On their own, they don't want to do anything bold. you need pressure. So you're kind of like, you're the first boat that landed on the beach in the amphibious invasion. You need, someone's got to start it. And it never succeeds. Something this bold never succeeds the first time. But now we understand the important argument to make, and let me know if you disagree with this, is that, look, the reality of what we're dealing with is people like you and I have come to the conclusion that there's no need for an FBI, and it's on net way more negative to the point that it's not worth having. We have robust state and local law enforcement, and we cannot have an FBI with an open-ended mandate to get involved in any investigation of any criminal category of any type, no matter where, no matter how. They could do anything they want. We cannot have that. But nonetheless, you know, the critical mass of Republicans, even conservatives, they think that there's some good they do in legitimate terrorism, and, you know, we don't want to take out the bad with the good. You know, whether you agree with that statement or not, that is an inveterate mentality we're going to be up against if we want to get something passed. So what you're doing is saying, look, I am the ultimate back the blue bill, because I'm not saying we're going to thwart anything. I'm saying that the local law enforcement officer is going to have oversight over who and what that should join. So if you are for back the blue and you think this is a great idea, and this is a case where we have some sort of Islamic jihadist that's, you know, plotting something with someone overseas, and he happens to live in Franklin County, Tennessee, well, the Franklin County sheriff, do you trust him more, or do you trust the FBI more? Is that what it sort of boils down to?
It does. And the people vote for their sheriff. They don't vote for the FBI. And if there is a legitimate national security threat in a particular municipality or a county, the sheriff should be apprised of that. The fact that he doesn't have a need to know from the FBI's perspective is irrelevant. We want to empower local law enforcement because those guys know the usual suspects. They have the intelligence. And most importantly, they're more accountable to the people. And the people expect them and elect them to keep the area safe. They shouldn't just outsource that to the federal government. We don't want federalized policing going on. We want localized. And this is, like you said, the ultimate back the blue type of bill.
No, exactly. It's not a leniency bill at all, which is kind of interesting, because when it came to tough local criminal statutes, all the bills we wanted on tightening three strikes and you're out, I never saw that this session. It's kind of interesting. You know, suddenly they get tough on crime. But again, this is not a defund the FBI sort of bill. Not that you can do that in a state anyway. It's not any of that. It's really just saying that ultimately we want the local chief law enforcement officer to be king over this, and to make sure that we don't have anarcho-tyranny, that truly true threats are dealt with, and things that aren't threats and worse are our own government acting lawlessly, the feds acting lawlessly and violating liberty, that they're going to stand for that. Any conservative of any stripe should support this bill, even in a vacuum, but certainly in the time we live in. So look, we're definitely going to work more on this together, and you know, I applaud you. I wish we had people doing this everywhere. But again, folks, I'm disappointed, but I'm not that surprised. But this is what we need to do. I could tell you we started off this way on a number of issues. Immigration enforcement was exactly like this. Are you kidding me? We're going to tell the feds what to do on immigration? Courts are going to strike it down. It's ridiculous. Now we're definitely getting traction. So, Steve, let's go back to the rationale, the need for this sort of legislation and similar other bills that we're ultimately going to need. Talk about your personal situation as a whistleblower of just utter banana republic stuff. Like, just so people know, this is not some dirtbags that really have criminal activity. Maybe the FBI is going one, two levels harsher on them because they're right-leaning rather than left-leaning. No. This is literally targeting people for being whistleblowers or doing nothing wrong. Talk about what you're personally dealing with the FBI now.
Well, yeah, just brief background on this. I came forward August 12th of 2022, brought my concerns to my frontline supervisor, made my protective disclosures at that point, and that sort of started me on this path that I'm in. I ultimately was suspended from duty about a month later, and then the FBI started the process against me in multiple ways. They arranged for my wife to lose her Facebook account. They leaked my private medical information to the New York Times and told them I was under investigation for discharging a firearm in my backyard. I was forced to participate in a compelled interview where they tried to get me into the General Flynn 1001 lying to a federal agent trap that I was able to tiptoe through the raindrops and avoid. They tried to issue a gag order and prevent me from talking to my family or my friends or even my attorney about the situation. I put in several requests for outside employment because I was unpaid and indefinitely suspended, and the FBI rejected those. So that was my experience in the immediate aftermath of coming forward, and then came to find out yesterday, did a free credit check on myself, that the FBI did a request for my credit information the exact same day that I made my initial disclosure. So leads to pretty logical deduction that I went to my frontline supervisor, he contacted executive management in my office in FBI Jacksonville, and the special agent in charge of FBI Jacksonville at the time, Sherry Hunks, was very close friends with the executive assistant director of human resources, Jennifer Moore, who was in charge of the security division that ultimately decided to suspend my security clearance 30 days later. So I think it's a, you can just follow the lines of connection there that went on. And I'm not unique. I have friends who are other FBI whistleblowers. They ran checks on their own credit. And it's apparent that the FBI looked at our credit histories in the immediate aftermath of us coming forward. And then for the others have done so hence after they've already left the FBI, which leads us to believe that they might actually have criminal or domestic terrorist investigations open on us.
Wait, what would they be doing with your, just describe why you would pull someone's credit and what you're trying to do with that?
Well, for my situation, I think the only benign reason that they would have done it would have been considered about me being a legitimate insider threat. Why would I be going against the company line? Because that's so rare, and maybe trying to see if I had some sort of unusual payments to me. But the truth of the matter is that they're doing an investigation. They're trying to find any transient reason to suspend your security clearance, because unlike the legislation that's been put forward that is supposed to revise whistleblower protection, it doesn't actually address the issue. The FBI does not actually have any sort of reprisal against whistleblowers for their whistleblowing officially. The reason that they are able to walk us out of the building is they suspend our security clearance for an unrelated issue. In my case, it was for looking at the employee handbook, they said improperly. For another individual, it was because he was shooting a firearm at a range, and a police officer came up to him to make sure that he was outside the distance of the school that he clearly demonstrated he was. And then as a result of that, they said that was unprofessional, so he had to have his security clearance suspended. And then another one who they alleged went to the media with his whistleblowing, and he didn't. We actually have an affidavit for the individual who did. So these are the reasons and the hacks around it, but they devote all the resources and turn all their guns on the messenger rather than doing what they should do, which is taking our reasonable concern of waste, fraud, abuse, or a risk to the public safety and investigating whether or not that has merit. We don't have to be right. We just have to be reasonable. But the FBI clearly sees us as the problem because we're willing to step outside of the company line.
You know, it strikes me as a shot across the bow. You probably have still some patriotic dudes left over from the, you know, post 9/11 recruitment, where some of them are coming up on retirement, and it's just a message like, hey, we don't want more people like Steve Friend.
Without question. I mean, there are people that were long-time tenured agents who said, I agree with what you're doing, but, you know, I'm just going to keep my head down trying to make it to retirement. And then we just had the Judiciary Committee issued a report a few months ago about the recruiting and hiring practices of the FBI and how it's gone completely woke and out of control, where they're hiring people who are 50 pounds overweight and have a history of drug use or criminal.
By the way, do they hire men anymore? Like, I see in all their pictures. What is this obsession with females?
Well, we just have to have the Women's Appreciation Month, which they were all in for throughout the month of March. And yes, I mean, apparently the FBI doesn't know that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 precludes you from hiring or even recruiting people based on their genitalia. But I think the FBI acknowledging what the law is a far cry from what they actually do now.
So, again, this is not over with. You know, I was speaking to a friend of mine who's a lawyer for J6 defendants, and you know, there are some signs that it's starting to, I don't want to say because it's getting bad. It's getting worse in some ways, but some other ways it's starting to abate a little bit. And, you know, judges look like they might be moving on, like they kind of squeezed out all the juice. But that's not a good thing, because what that means is, you know, it wasn't about January 6th. It has nothing to do with that. That was a catalyst, but now they're into everything and they're going to move on. So there's been, and I know you've seen these stories. I wanted to get your take because I wanted to make sure they were authentic, but it does appear that people who were legitimately plainclothes FBI agents knocked on the doors of two individuals, one in a Texas woman, because she posted on Twitter that she had a relative who was drugged and you know, killed by a druggie, and basically was saying he walks out on probation, and then, you know, was attacking the local officials and said, may you reap what you have sown. And clearly anyone understands that in criminal justice, you're saying you let out criminals, you deserve to be attacked by the very people that you you did. It's not like, oh, I have a knife and I'm going to come to your home. It's very clear that's political rhetoric. And then we have also, interestingly enough, this case of a Muslim woman in Stillwater, Oklahoma, that from what I can see, you know, had what is fairly ubiquitous among Muslims living in America, unfortunately, and this is an immigration issue, just, you know, vile anti-Israel and clearly anti-Jewish as well, just hates Jews and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, there's nothing in there that without some sort of prima facie credible threat that she's involved in some sort of planning of criminal activity or terrorism or attack, just doesn't like Jews, which, you know, that is the price that we have to pay for freedom of speech. You can't criminalize that. So I want to be very careful to my audience here. This is something that nobody could accuse me of taking sides on because I agree with the political speech. I mean, I agree with the first one against the jailbreak, but this I certainly don't, and we really shouldn't be letting these people into the country. But nonetheless, once they are, we can't have the FBI doing this. So I want to get your general comment on this, and also to give a sense of how does this happen? Like, does someone call it in? Do they? How does it come that you post something political on Facebook and FBI agents show up at your door?
Well, basically the way that it would come in, there's a couple different avenues. We had revealed a couple of years ago about Operation Bronze Griffin, which is a confidential human source who works for Facebook and then provides private communications from people's Facebook accounts back to the FBI without a search warrant or a subpoena or consent. So there's a Fourth Amendment violation going on there. But what I could assess from looking at both of those, likely, especially in Oklahoma, was this was what's called a guardian. Now, the FBI has a software called Guardian, which is essentially like a 911 system that you can email or call the FBI. They have a facility in West Virginia called NTOC, and people there will take in calls and tips and then disseminate them around the field. In this case, the tip probably came in and they sent it out to Oklahoma. And then it's up to the discretion of the agents who receive that to look at it and on its merits and determine what the contents are and make a decision on how to act. Now, I agree with you. This is all First Amendment protected activity. It should not have been resourced at all. And the fact that they went out there with two agents and it looked like an analyst was just incredibly disturbing, because the FBI is not the jerk police. And in this country, you have the right to be a jerk and to say things that offend people's sensibilities, as long as there's not an actual call to violence. And there's case law on this that the FBI is now interpreting anything that they find to be a little bit spicy as a mandate to go and at least attempt a contact. And there's another bureaucratic element to this. They claim credit for this. They have a stat quota for the number of interviews that they have to do and the number of assessments that they have to open. So this was just an easy ground ball type of case that they could open it up, close it out. And there's a metric for how quickly they can do it. So maybe this was towards the end of the time that they had to do it. And the bosses get bonuses based on how quickly you're able to do it. So there's a lot of other elements at play. I don't necessarily think it's a perfect puzzle where it's a plot against a particular person. A lot of times it's just oars pulling in the same direction that all lead to essentially tyranny.
Because in general, they wouldn't be too predisposed to, you know, with all the woke dogma that you see on their you know, just out in the open, they wouldn't be so, let's just say, alacritous to go after Muslims. But so this, again, might be a quota bureaucratic issue. Then you've really talked a lot about that over and beyond the ideological problems, you just have the stupidity of, you know, you have quotas chasing a problem rather than chasing the problem itself. But what's scary is that we clearly are in a position now where it's not like, oh, prima facie, we have probable cause, you committed a crime. Oh, let's go maybe check into you and investigate, look at your social media. No, it's the social media posting alone without any other, you know, evidence or credible threat of any action or activity driving a potential investigation. And what I find really scary, I want to get your comment, knowing how the FBI operates in society, the way we work, and COVID really turbocharged this. We're more divided than any time since the Civil War, really more, I would argue, because that was primarily over one issue. This is over everything, basic humanity from up to down, left to right. And we've seen this in the polling already, that unlike on the right, where, you know, we're trying to be intellectually honest, like, you know, I really detest the amount of Islamists we brought into the country and their mentality, but nonetheless, I'm not going to want to violate First Amendment just to own them. But the other way around is not like that. We've seen polling data that show, you remember this, more than half wanted to lock up, take away rights from people who didn't get a vaccine. People who think the election is stolen, people who think this, people who think that, they literally believe that if you think something that they disagree with or they find reprehensible, that's tantamount to criminal activity. I mean, this is a pervasive view on the left. So you're telling me now that we have a situation, you could have millions of people out there that could initiate a call to the FBI and that will trigger some sort of investigation.
That's exactly what happened with January 6th. You had tips that were coming in anonymously. There were sounded like some sort of dispute issue. There would be something innocuous like, oh, my brother, he probably voted for Trump, so you should go send somebody out to his house. And the FBI, in large part, complied with that as opposed to just throwing them out. I myself got an anonymous tip from out of state that said that they thought that an individual was at the Capitol. Just by the fact that it was anonymous meant that there was no complainant to it. It couldn't be actually properly prosecuted, but I was told that I needed to go and interview the person, not because even if he admitted to it, we didn't really have any verification of it, but there was also a hope that he would say, well, you know, I was there and I know other people who were there and we could develop more targets. So the FBI is happily taking this information and not really doing the full discretionary thing that we expect of professional law enforcement and doing the bidding of the one side versus the other, because the other side is very libertarian. And this comes down to a fundamental asymmetrical battle that's going on. One side just wants to get along,
yep,
and the other side thinks that they're fighting Nazis and they will use all the levers of power necessary to win.
And when you have the FBI with that much power, I mean, even a neutral FBI, this dynamic would be a problem with the degree, the scope of authority they have, but certainly the way we know they already are. And this just gets back to what we started with, that the good news is, despite its robust size, it cannot possibly police everyone's opinions everywhere, and it needs a local law enforcement. And that is why getting local law enforcement in the community of the people together, working together to go after real crime but protect civil liberties, it's why this sort of legislation that we're talking about in Tennessee is just so, so important that we need to replicate. And Steve, again, I mean, I can't applaud you enough. You have the heart, you have the mind. Like you said, you weren't a political guy, you're just an FBI agent, career law enforcement, and you understand that, you experienced it personally, you're seeing it, it's pervasive, it's not any one issue, it's not like, okay, it's just January 6th, maybe we finally get over that, we'll go back to normal. It's not, it's getting worse, and you know, you tried at a federal level, it's a dumpster fire, the Republican Party sucks, and so this is the only thing we have left, and you're the first effort. So, you know, Godspeed on that. Again, just where could people go to keep up with you?
Yeah, so if you go to AmericaRenewing.com, that's the Center for Renewing America's website, and you can look at all the staff members there and all the work that I put out and written there, and they can find it. You can also track on my podcast, which is called the American Radicals Podcast, and that's on Rumble. We have a show every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, and if you listen to it on iTunes, it'll stream there as well. So I appreciate anyone who wants to hear what we're talking about. I do that show with another whistleblower.
And at Real Steve Friend is a follow on Twitter. Godspeed with what you're doing, and Godspeed all of you folks. We got to stay safe, stay free, more importantly, making red states red again. This is what we need to do. Go to conaction.network, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Till tomorrow, God bless y'all. Micah 6-8, and thank you for listening.